Hello and welcome to another Total Football Analysis magazine podcast. Today we are joined by Hugh Jennings, who is Academy Director at English Premier League football club Fulham. Hugh, thank you ever so much for giving up your time today.
Hi Chris, thank you very much for welcoming me.
Now Hugh, I've given you a very, very short introduction there, of course, and titles mean a million different things in different football clubs. Would you mind just giving us a little bit of a background into who you are and what your role is within Fulham?
Yes, of course, Chris. I started life many moons ago for a working capacity as a teacher for 12 years and did a lot of volunteering in football, predominantly schools football, but junior league football as well. And then the advent of academies in England in 1998, sadly, I suspect before some of your listeners were born, I took the plunge into academy football as head of education at Southampton. I then subsequently became academy manager at Southampton. I spent 3 years at the Premier League when the Southampton project hit the buffers slightly because the club went into administration, and then re-emerged post the Premier League experience into Fulham 10 years ago.
Wow, is it as long as that now, 10 years at Fulham? Your name rings a bell for me, sort of like from the early years at Southampton, because Southampton obviously having such a well-known reputation for academy development, and it was kind of there where I first sort of noticed your work. I can't believe it's been 10 years at Fulham. But anyway, I'm sure the time has flown. So if you wouldn't mind then, Hugh, just tell us a little bit more about what the role of an academy director is at Fulham.
Yeah, so my role is to take responsibility for all the aspects of player development from under 23 downwards. I sit on the club's management board as well as part of sort of steering the club, hopefully in the right direction. Although you generously described us as a Premier League club, we're just a Premier League club at the moment. How much longer that will be for this season? Time will tell.
That was not something I was going to go into for you, Hugh, because let's remain positive on that on that side of things.
Yeah, absolutely. And so trying very hard to not only ensure that there's a pathway to for development for the best young players through to our first team, help also players who don't make our first team move on to the next stage in their careers and their lives in general, but critically also playing as much of a part in trying to help the club move forward from the side.
Fantastic. Now, obviously, as we're a football analysis podcast, the key theme of today's conversation is going to be around how analysis, tactical analysis and all that good stuff fits into your day-to-day sort of life as the academy director at Fulham. So if you'd be good enough to give us a bit of a flavour of where analysis as a tool does fit into what you do, that'd be fantastic.
I think on one level you say it fits into absolutely everything. I think if you're not constantly reviewing and questioning and challenging what you do, then you know you're not moving forward. And I'd like to think that we have a group of staff here at the Fulham Academy who constantly questioning and constantly challenging both themselves and each other, and a culture supported by a value-centric approach that ensures that we constantly challenge each other. But down to sort of more practical basis, something that we've done increasingly now for the last few seasons is to drill down into more detail on each individual player to try to ensure that we're assessing them individually as opposed to focusing on teams, trying to ensure also that we have the right data for the right level of assessment. And by that I mean not only just age specific, position specific, but also I think the but maturation specific. So a lot of analysis goes into our program, and hopefully at the end of it you emerge with two things. One is the right assessment of the player for the here and now, and secondly the right assessment of the player for the future.
I see the academy side of sort of analysis is fascinating to me, because you're dealing with so many different age groups, different levels, different maturity, so many different moving parts in there, which is what makes it for me different to the sort of the first team side of it. And also for some of our listeners, when they think of tactical analysis and the video analysis side of it, quite often the obvious sort of preconception of it is around what can we do to make our team win more games of football. And you've mentioned there straight away that it's become a little bit more on the player development sort of focus as opposed to team focus. At what point in your time at Fulham did that become more of a focus?
Yeah, no, I think that's an interesting question, because we probably take it for granted that our programme is wholly individually focused. Now, for sure, you want to ensure that you place the individual in a team that's coherent, that you create a winning in a culture and environment so that you always go out to try and be competitive and to win games. But the overriding principle here is to ensure that we focus on what that individual needs from the time they join you to the time that they move forward, hopefully to end up playing the game professionally in the first team. And if you haven't got that as your focus, then you get distracted by results. You get distracted by periods of time where a player perhaps underachieves or underperforms, and where you haven't taken account of the factors for that. So as a youth developer, and I'd like to think, if you like, as a champion of youth, that you really do have to take a longitudinal view. The moment you start focusing on the here and now is the moment that you lose sight of that, and you end up making judgments that are inappropriate and inaccurate. And that's a really important factor for us.
So on a more practical sort of level, is in how do you do it? And obviously, if there's a level of trade secrets that you can't go into, I completely respect that, and you don't have to tell us everything. But when you're developing, let's say, just plucking something out of the air, an under-18s player now, and am I right to believe that there'll be a certain sort of profile and a certain place in his development or her development that you would expect them to be at? And there'll be a certain style of analysis that you're using with them? Or is it that it is just so utterly dependent on the person that there is no sort of, not even a one-cap-fits-all type approach, but it's not even that closely profiled?
So we've got a couple of core foundation stones that are pivotal for us. In terms of our playing and coaching philosophy, so we follow some acronyms. For those of us who struggle with memory. So we have five moments of the game. And typically, if you take something like intelligent defending, which is one of those five moments, we benchmark the players against their ability to be intelligent defenders. And there's a whole set of strands to this, which relate to age, which relate to player position, which relate to progression. And then we marry that with a coaching philosophy, which we call impact, the impact of the coach on the player, and the ability for the coach to individualize and to motivate the players, for example, as within the coaching philosophy. And if you put those two together, then you have an analysis tool that we use called CLASS. And CLASS is an acronym that stands for Character, Learner, Ability and Speed, as the first four letters. And they're typical of the sort of FA traditional four-corner model or tips from IX. But the last S for CLASS is success. And this is a really key feature for us, our ability to actually show the level of success that players can have benchmarked against five moments of the game, benchmarked against the coach's impact assessment. So you've got three areas here that provide us with the underpinning, I suppose, philosophical approach to the way in which we would assess our players. And we've got a number of other assessment tools which probably we'll go and talk about in a minute, or sort of scientific assessment tools. But we tried very hard to break the game down as simply as possible, with as simple a playing philosophy as possible, as simple a coaching philosophy as possible, and a simple assessment tool as possible. And that's what we arrived at.
And then I guess by having something that is so clear and so consistent, it's then easier to grade and benchmark people on their path, because you know what you're comparing them to. And if that pillar is changing all the time, then it's impossible to get some form of consistency in your analysis, I presume.
Yeah, it is. And people might imagine that a lot of this would center around formations, or it would center around some tactical element, where all of those areas are subsumed within either the playing philosophy or the coaching philosophy. So lots of people would answer a question, say, what underpins your strategy? And they'll say, well, we're a 4-3-3 club. And I get and understand that. And every player that we have needs to be able to play within a 4-3-3. But actually, they also need to be able to play 3-5-2 or a 4-2-3-1 or any other variable. And therefore, our approach, and bearing in mind we're working here with young boys from 8 years of age, our approach is those things are secondary and subsidiary. They're not part of the core tenets of the way in which we operate. So we have, as part of the playing philosophy, for example, if you take controlling possession as one of those, then there's lots of different ways in which you can control possession. You know, sometimes you're trying to control possession by limiting the amount of touches you may have on the ball, because you want to move the ball quite quickly. At other occasions, you are managing a game and you're wanting to retain the ball as long as possible. So, but the underpinning philosophy that we have, or one part of our philosophy of controlling possession, is always there. Now, we might have a challenge if across the club we brought in, and by the way, this approach is signed up to by our technical board, which is led by our chief exec, Alistair McIntosh, and where members of the first team staff attend, including Scott Parker, our manager, that, it's important that these guys sign up to this approach. It's not just an academy in isolation. It's, it's not a social experiment here. What we're trying to do is to make sure that through the club, people understand that this is how we will operate. So if we were to bring in a first team manager, and arguably Claudio Ranieri was a bit like this, he played from back to front earlier. We were less focused on dominating the ball than we had been under Slavisa Jokanovic. But that didn't impact on the academy players. So the academy approach and philosophy remained the same. When our players stepped in to train with Claudio or to play in Claudio's team, then they needed to be able to adapt. And we hope that our work with them enables them to adapt. And
And that work, I presume, is the work that's going on sort of years in advance. You're helping younger players understand the need for being able to play in different styles. And there's only so many styles that they have to learn, of course. So they are sort of there. It's just flicking that switch when they're when they're in that
situation. Yeah, very much so. Very much so. So, I'd sort of conclude this bit by I suppose trying to encourage your listeners to be reflective of, if you take that span of age from 8 years of age through to, I mean, we realistically finish the development path by 21. So for that very long phase of time, then you have to be very clear that there's the coherency that's required around coaching philosophy, your playing philosophy, assessment criteria, if you like, has to be suitably broad to accommodate all different facets, but equally has to be clearly understood sufficiently by all levels of players and coaches and other members of staff through the phases that it hopefully makes sense.
Okay. So with that in mind then, Hugh, and you mentioned the wide age span that you've got there. At what point do you start showing players on video, for example, what they're doing well, what they're not doing so well, and that side?
Well, we use the video platform we have. I hope it's I can name it. It's Huddle, which I know lots of clubs and other and indeed it's available in other sports. I understand that lots of sports organisations utilise a platform like Huddle, and we it's available from the off. So virtually all games and some training sessions are for each age group are available. And that all the players get an individual login, and they are able to look at the platform, look at their own footage, and indeed look at a range of exemplar footage that we've got on. So we've got examples of the five moments of the game in action through youth football, through senior football, which includes not just Fulham, but also with iconic teams and players and countries, and we expect the players to be operating with Huddle from day one, really. Now, you don't have to have a smartphone available to be able to do it, and we've got access here at the training ground in order for people to be able to log in here. There's lots of access opportunities even for those who may not have that much direct access from home. But it's vast majority of the generation, certainly 12 upwards, is using the technology all the time. So introducing it to them early is where we start.
Now, how do you go about then getting the parents sort of buy-in on this as well? Because, if it's like 8, 9, 10, 11, I'm presuming, again, that the parents are still very active in this part of their development. So is there an element of getting the parents buy-in as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And I really want to be clear with your listeners about the fact that this isn't some kind of social engineering experiment. We're not trying to indoctrinate our players by forcing them to watch their video footage and so on. That's not what this is about. This is very much about development tool. And for sure, we fully expect parents to be engaged. We run a parent education program, which covers a range of different areas. There's quite a lot of interaction between our performance analysts and the parent community, because they're often asked questions about the footage. But it's not designed. I think the way to describe it is, whilst it's great for the individual learning tool, it's not designed to indoctrinate people. It's designed to be a sort of seminal support system that ensures that the players have available that capacity to review, that capacity to watch and learn from others, and frankly also that capacity to question. So the question may come of the coach, or the question may come of themselves, or the question of players around them. So that's a significant part of its value as well.
Now, just rewinding sort of slightly there, because as you say, you came into academy football at the advent of academy football when it all changed. This type of stuff must have changed beyond all recognition for you over the course of your career.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I reflect back at times. I cringe a little bit when I think back to some of the coaching styles and methodologies that we utilised back then, and recognise that the advancement and the ability to utilise a far greater breadth of learning tools is terrific. And frankly, I'd say that's one of the reasons why I think we have got technically much more adept players in this country than we did have 20 years ago. But that doesn't mean that everything that was done then should be thrown out. There's still remains no substitute for the coach as the mentor, the coach as the guide, the coach as the, I think the coach as the, as if you like, the critical friends, the coach as the leader, the coach as the the fulcrum, if you like, of the activity for the group that the player will be engaged in. You can't learn in isolation, and the value of the interpersonal contact with the coach or coaches and analysts and whoever else, there's no substitute. And I think increasingly what we're seeing, whether it's in relation to sort of pushback on some aspects of social media, which incidentally I see as a power for good, but, you know, certain aspects there that clearly are inappropriate. But I think lots of young people now crave that interpersonal interaction, that they're not necessarily getting, or probably anywhere else apart from within a school or college.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think it's also important for us to re-emphasize the point that you can't teach a youngster to become a footballer just by showing them the videos of what other players would be like in that position and what they're like in that position. There's obviously a lot more to it than just the video analysis side of it.
Yeah, very good point. I mean, you know, it's only of any value if you can put it into practice. And I think we also take a view that football intelligence, which is so critical to the success for any player. And if you look a little bit at some of the more recent England teams playing, then, you know, I think you can see in some of those players a real grasp of what I might describe as sort of modern football intelligence, where Steve Wigley, our head of coaching here at Fulham, has the phrase by he describes playing the game in the future. And players who naturally, at a macro level, understand the broad features of the game, but at a micro level also, they know where the next pass is before they receive the ball, for example. So, you know, it's imperative that the players have the opportunity to practice live. They have the opportunity to practice with others within a coaching environment, a learning environment with others. You can't do it in isolation. You can do some practice in isolation, but certainly not develop yourself ultimately in isolation. So those are the things that, you know, we certainly think are also very, very key to key to the development of our players.
So over the sort of the last decade or so, and as not just social media, but technology has obviously changed so much in that space of time, and even in the years preceding it, but particularly in the last decade, have you seen a change in the way that the younger footballer interacts with the coaches, the questions that they ask, their buy-in to this kind of stuff, because they're growing up with it now? This isn't like the challenge of the first team analyst or the first team coach who's then trying to get somebody who's done 300 first team games and has never used this type of stuff before, so quite rightly goes, well, why do I need it now? These are people who are growing up with all this stuff embedded in their life.
Absolutely, and therefore any additional learning tool has got to be helpful. It's got to be used. It's got to be used appropriately. You've got to have the right level of interaction. But I'll give you a couple of examples. So we now encourage our younger players in their review meetings, which is staged sort of three times a year. In their review meeting, we encourage them to come to the review meeting having cut their own footage to show where they have been working on their targets. So thinking about that, back 20 years ago, number one, 20 years ago, there was very little video footage of games. Number two, there was no digitalization, so you literally cutting a videotape. And number three, when it came to sort of coding, if you like, there was no capacity to code games. And the advancement in those areas are just phenomenal. And it gives the power then to the player. And there was a period, I think, when the power was with the coach, and it was the coach was king. And now I think the power's with the player, and the coach is pivotal to the player's success. But you can certainly continue to have success even if the coach may not be as technologically savvy as you are.
Yeah, no, I completely understand that. And what I like about the change is that I suppose when video analysis was just coming in, then it took it away from being just one person's opinion of the situation and this is what should have happened or this is what you're doing in that situation. There's now both pairs of eyes can see it. But also now if the player is getting that ownership of actually, I'm doing this here, so is this good, is this bad? That when you've got that person buying into actually challenging it themselves, then that's got to make the coach's job a lot easier, and they can play a slightly different role. And coaching styles have obviously evolved, not just in the last decade, but again in recent years, a lot because of all this stuff.
Yeah, and fundamentally, particularly for kinesthetic learners, you know, doing things for yourself almost inevitably is the best way for you to learn. And therefore, if you've got ownership of your own footage, you've got ownership of your own highlights, you therefore, your targets that you've agreed and, if you like, been encouraged to consider as ways to improve and develop yourself, become more personal to you. They're not something that's imposed on you. They're not something that the coach has told you you've got to do better. You know, now still for me, there are some things where you also need to have that on pitch direct interaction that isn't just going to be relayed to you via footage. I was talking earlier today about some of the nuances of defending, and you know, there's examples of foot patterns, example of how to use your arms, example of just simple body positioning techniques that actually we probably don't do anything like as much as we would have done a long time ago. Now, you know, you don't often these days see sort of the typical Friday set piece session, where I can think back to watching Dave Bassett coach, a successful experience for him working with Harry Redknapp at the time. But Dave would spend hours with the players on, you know, on set piece situations. And you couldn't do that in the same way now, because the players' focus and concentration just isn't the same. And it wasn't great then. And and certainly the way in which, you know, a lot of it was stationary, a lot of it was robotic, a lot of it was rote learned. So all of those things, now you've got to find different ways in which you can encourage players to take on board information and hopefully do it as better, if not even better.
Now, I like that last point, actually, because that leads me on to the next question that I wanted to ask. Now, it's great that all this stuff exists. Obviously, it's benefiting people, but a bit like a kid who has to go to school every day because it's there and he's going to learn stuff, or she's going to learn stuff, and all that sort of side of it, there are still going to be people, I am sure, who just aren't that much of a fan of this learning, or this way of learning, shall we say. So how do you work as a staff with that side of it? Because people learn in different ways. And although we can all agree that surely video analysis and all that sort of side of it does enhance in many situations, it isn't going to be like that for everyone.
Yeah, I think if you come and watch our staff work on a regular basis, you'll see they employ a very wide range of techniques. With the youngest kids, where there's probably, you know, greater capacity to learn new approaches, then you'll probably have the most varied activity, and this will range from individual intervention, from letting from free play, from bringing a group in to show them on a whiteboard, showing them something on an iPad, question and answer. Sometimes individuals from a group leading a part of a session. All of those are examples of ways in which coaches will, you know, tactics that coaches will employ to help the players to learn. And to be honest, most of those things you do right the way through your age groups, but you will certainly in the youngest phases make sure there's a huge amount of variety in the approaches that you use. And bearing in mind, and this is something that's been introduced really through the FA's assessment of coaching, is ball rolling time. Because within a session of 90 minutes, you know, the ball should be moving for 75% of that time. And, you know, if it isn't, then ultimately the likelihood is the players are having less exposure to the opportunity to learn than they would have been had they actually been engaged in the activity. So, you know, there's a whole set of of criteria, if you like, to try and ensure that not only are individual sessions good, but over a phase of sessions, you're covering widest sphere of coaching methodologies.
Yeah. So where does the data statistical side of all this fit into the development journey for the players, in terms of what are you tracking and what sort of benchmarks are you looking at and what kind of things are important at different points? And I know that's a lot of questions in one, but I'm interested to know more.
Yes, well, we're working with an organisation called Player Maker at the moment, and they're an organisation that have developed a boot technology which can track every move players make via GPS. So camera technology is not required, because if you think about it, it's one thing to view footage, but also it's another thing to actually have all of the individual actions that a player is making during the course of a training session or game. So that's very much in the embryonic stage. We're working with them as a sort of research partner and seeing where that might take us. But the future may well hold the ability for every time a player is involved in a training session or a game, that they can have multitudinal data that's available to them, which will be on both technical, tactical, and physical outputs. For the time being, for us, in addition to Huddle that I've mentioned, we'll do physical assessments with the players, and that would include maturation predictive information, which is important to us to not only assess where they are physically now, but where they might be in the future, and not as a means of ruling in or ruling out, but actually as a means of trying to help them to maximise their strengths. From the other performance aspects is on a very rudimentary level, we're trying to see if we can compact some of the data we retain on the players and develop individual data analytical profiles. Now, this is, you have to be very, very careful in this space, in my mind, because it's sort of much more groundbreaking technology that you haven't necessarily got the validity for, and you haven't benchmarked. But you're starting, for instance, to assess the players against the five moments of the game into their individual scores. So classically, if you're taking creating and converting chances as one of our five moments of the game, then it's shots on target, it's goals scored, it's attempts on goal, it's in terms of crosses that are made by individuals or by groups. You can cumulatively assess those game by game and block by block. You start to build a bit of a picture of how your players, how they benchmark against others that you're assessing. So this is an area which should be treated carefully, and no one should get carried away by thinking that we've got this data analytics system applied to youth can predict which players are going to be successful in chant. It's very much more, it's not used as a predictive assessment, it's used as a quantitative assessment that gives us an analysis on where the players are at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. No, and it's nice to hear that the marry up that, although it is at an academy sort of, it's at the academy sort of level, that there are still some of the core things that most of us would consider as still being important in any game of football and sort of side of it is being sort of tracked. And although, as you say, it doesn't rule people in, rule people out, it does start to give you an idea of what a player might start to look like and so on and so forth. So that's really good. Now,
yeah.
Go on, sorry.
Yeah. No, I was going to say, I mean, one of the areas that we're all wrestling with at the moment, I referred to sort of mental health, and we've got to all be very mindful that you need to treat the wealth of data that's available sympathetically to ensure that no one, that's coaches or players, are feeling overwhelmed by by a sort of a data analytics age that may actually not afford them the privilege of time to grow up as young people.
Well, it was more around that. I mean, because the last thing you want is sort of a 12-year-old going home at night worrying about his past completion, right? I mean, as you say. So how do you keep that side of the feedback sort of positive enough and fun enough? Because obviously you want them to develop. And at the end of the day, if a youngster needs to learn how to keep possession of the ball as part of his development, that's important. But equally, you don't want him to be going home, as I say, worrying about his past completion rate. So No. That must be so tricky.
No, and so much of the development of players should be natural and should not be robotic. So it's key to ensure that you keep a certain amount of this information almost in the background, and you probably don't share it with players and parents. And even when you share it amongst staff, you do so in such a way that it's as a backup for us to use to examine performance in greater depth if we need. And only when there might be, let's say, a query about a player who's all of a sudden lost a lot of form, that you might then look back at the information and say, okay, how does this compare to what we know about him? Oh, is he experiencing a period of growth and maturation? We know he's capable of this at the moment. He's dipped to this, and that's probably because he's grown 3 inches in the last 6 weeks or something. So you know that those are the ways in which I think you can use them as checks and balances to ensure you don't get yourself in a position, you're weighed down by the burden of data and you're using it to your advantage as a backup.
So Hugh, the last bit I just want to touch on with you then, if I may, is around a lot of our listeners are budding sort of performance analysts. They're at university and they're looking to break into the professional game. And a lot of them will end up working within academies as their first sort of footing into their professional career. When you're looking for people to come in on maybe a voluntary basis or they're taking their first job in a club like you, what are the sort of things that you're looking for in a potential new recruit in that respect?
Well, I think that you have to demonstrate that you can apply your knowledge, and that comes in a range of ways. You've got to be able to liaise with staff in a wide variety of contexts. Clearly, the relationship with the coaching staff is critical, but you may also need to relate to the exercise science staff, the medical staff, management leadership staff, so that you can demonstrate that you're not just somebody who's sort of playing a real life video game with your analysis, and that it's realistic and it's appropriate. So that's one area. I think the balance between knowing having good information, knowledge and understanding of the game, and being able to actually understand in a development pathway, maybe different for the first time, but certainly in a development pathway, that you know what areas of your work can be helpful to helping the individual develop and progress. So if you're taking if you're taking a midfield player, for example, then a 12-year-old is unlikely to be able to hit a 40-yard switcher play pass, and therefore there's no point trying to show them footage of Jordan Henderson playing for England hitting a great diag into Raheem Sterling. So you've got to be able to ensure you, maybe a bit of a superficial example, but you've got to be able to show that you can relate your knowledge and understanding to the needs of the players, the needs of the coaches and other staff. And I think that's pivotal. It's all too easy for people on the technological side to be focused a lot on the sort of finer aspects of footage, as opposed to be thinking about how can we use this as an appropriate and effective learning tool.
Okay, no, that's great advice and makes perfect sense. Fantastic. Well, look, Hugh, that's a lovely place for us to finish today's interview. I think it's been wonderful learning so much about what happens within an academy. And that's what I like about doing these podcasts is actually I personally learn a lot, which means I'm pretty sure a lot of our listeners will get a lot of learning from that as well. So thank you very much for giving up your time today.
I've enjoyed it. I hope the listeners stay awake.
Well, I've not had any feedback yet of anybody using this as a good meditation tool to help themselves get to sleep at night. But who knows? This could be the first one, and I'll be sure to share the feedback with you if that does turn out to be the case. But I can't imagine it will be.
Cheers. Thanks a lot.
Once again, my thanks to Hugh Jennings for his time and insight today, and to you listeners for giving up your time to listen in. If you've enjoyed our chat, please do let people know about us on social media at Total Analysis on Twitter or Total Football Analysis Magazine on Facebook. Also, subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out on the next one and leave us a nice review. If you want daily content, head over to totalfootballanalysis.com where you'll be able to find all our daily posts of tactical analysis. We'll be back next week. Hi, folks. I hope you enjoyed today's podcast. If you're still listening now, I think we can agree you might have done. If you want to get even more tactical analysis from us, you want to head over to totalfootballanalysis.com. Over there, you can get over 100 pieces of written analysis a month for as little as £2, as well as taking out an annual subscription to our monthly digital magazine. And because we like you, we are offering 10% off all subscriptions to Total Football Analysis magazine if you use the discount code PODCAST at checkout. That's PODCAST. You use it at the checkout, and that will mean you get 12 months of website and magazine for just £45. That's a good deal, folks. I would cash in on that if I were you.